Hello everyone, welcome back to another fun-filled, action-packed episode of 1HMPS Retro. I'm your host with the most, Andy, aka The Real Local Maniac. I think I forgot to mention, this is episode 16, and my co-host today is the one, the only...
Yes, I am the man who will stand above all of retro gaming. Yes, it's me, ZXSpecStar.
What happened to the man without the plan then, Tony?
Well, it's watching far too much Kamen Rider, and the catchphrase he uses is, I just love it.
I was wondering where that came from.
Well, would you expect it to be from anywhere else from what I watch?
Oh, man, I'll tell you what, I'm actually really excited about doing this podcast, and the reason being is, this is the first time me and you have actually recorded together.
Yeah, indeed. I was about to say, it's about time, though, really, isn't it?
How many episodes have you been with us, then?
Well, blimey, how many is it? I think it was around... I did episode 7 was my first one, wasn't it? So it's coming up 10 episodes now. We're nearly at 10. So, yeah, it's been a strange trip so far, but I've been loving every moment of it.
I'm glad, mate. I'm really glad that you joined the site team. You're a great sort of like co-host and everything like that. So you're doing an amazing job, buddy.
Oh, I'm glad to think so. And I've seen from the comments from the guys that have commented on me videos and things like this. They enjoy my work. And all I can do is just keep producing more to... the adoring public that is with us.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, that's what I love about our podcast, and that's what I love about our site, basically. We've got five guys with completely different styles of retro reviewing, and I think that just makes up for a great, interesting sort of like site and podcast, basically.
It does, because if we were all the same and all things like this, then our podcast just wouldn't be as interested, our reviews wouldn't be interesting, or anything along the sides of that. It's those differences between us which make... Our cast and everything else like that just unique to a lot of the others, and you could see from a lot of others, it's just faceless people just sitting there talking and things like this. They just don't have the life and the soul like we have.
They're not as cool as us, Tony. They're not as fantastic as us.
No, we just reek of all shakes of awesome.
At this moment in time, Tony, I'm reeking of beer, because basically I am drinking because we're recording late on a Saturday night.
Indeed we are. It's coming on somewhat early in the morning at ridiculous o'clock. But hey, it just shows our dedication to keep this out. We'll do it at any time.
Definitely, mate, definitely. Okay, so guys, this time round... we've got sort of the same similar style podcast. We've got like us basically doing the two game reviews. Our topic of the month won't be really a topic of the month. This time we've got our special guest. Who is our guest this time we've got?
Yeah, we've been talking to Asperger's Gamer. He has the grand honour of being our first special guest to the podcast.
Yeah, so basically we'll find out a little bit about him. We'll do a little quiz with him as well. And then after that, we've got our Q&A section, which I quite like that. Dan, you quite enjoy that, mate, as well?
Oh, I do enjoy the old Q&A section. We need a few more people to come out with some more Xenia questions, though. But I reckon as time goes past, they'll all start appearing. I still think I'm due some payback for the one I gave you on the last podcast, aren't I?
Yeah. Oh, God. All right, then, mate. So, what have you been up to then, buddy?
Well, besides the usual drivel and drone of the old workforce, I actually managed to treat myself to a new game the other day. And I've actually sat there and got Portal 2 at long last.
Oh, wow, mate. I tell you what, I've still got that on Love Film, and I can't wait to actually get through that, because I'd never played any of the Portal games, and I remember you going on about it. So I put that on my Love Film list, got the first game, absolutely loved it, and I'm just waiting for the second one.
Well, the good thing about it is I've actually now finished it as well, for alongside it as well. And if for anybody who's played the first one and were thinking, just how could they actually make this any better or anything like this, they have made it 10 times better over than what it was. There is a proper integrated storyline. The characters feel so warm to you and things like this. There's only about four... you only hear about three different voices through the whole entire game that form the story, but it's just so well done. It's just amazing.
I'll tell you what, I cannot wait to get that. I think I've put that on my high priority list, so I'm hoping within the next like week and a bit, hopefully I should get that game. Anything else you've been up to then, buddy?
No, it's just made me sitting down. Also, going back to the old game.
Mostly sitting down?
Yeah, well, I sit down at work on my arse all day.
Well, you get paid for that, mate. That's all good.
No, but also, like I say, I've been watching me Kamen Rider and finished off Kamen Rider Kabuto. And as for Mr. Asperger's, yes, I actually converted him to Kamen Rider as well. So nobody's safe. You'll all start watching it sooner or later.
I think that is your mission, your secret mission behind the podcast. You want to convert the whole world into Kamen Rider.
Oh, of course. So what have you been up to, Andy Man?
To be honest with you, not a lot, dude, because all I've been doing is sleeping. I've been sleeping like a bear. And the reason being is, like, I've been getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning to go to work, and it's really been taking its toll on me. That's the reason why I've been a little bit absent on the site, because basically I've been going to work, leaving the house around 3:30-ish, been getting home about 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and I've just been in, like, I don't know, in a daze, sleeping, waking up, going back to sleep, posting maybe something on the forum, and that's about it. I've had no time for gaming, no time for anything like that. So I thought, after about 5 days of doing a bunch of early shifts, I thought, Saturday night now, I'm going to record the podcast with Tony. I haven't sort of had a few beers in quite some time, so I thought, why not? Let's get drunk. Let's have a laugh.
Oh, it's all a good thing, mate.
All right, mate. I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll move on to our game section then.
Oh, yes, let's go into that.
So, Tony, I'll tell you what, I'll let you go first, buddy. What is the first game you're going to tell me all about then?
Well, first of all, I've decided that, seeing that a lot of console games have been chosen in the past, I'm going to stick to the good old PC matter on this one. And the first game I've chosen from is Sam & Max Hit the Road.
I have heard of this. It's made by LucasArts, but I've never played it. Tell me about it. Sell the game to me, buddy.
Sell the game to you, mate. Right. Well, as far as it goes, it does fall into the old, long-forgotten genre of point-and-click adventures. It's a shame on my behalf that this genre has vanished completely. But for what it was and for the time it came through, it was possibly one of the most black comedy sort of point-and-click adventures you can get your hands on. It was a cartoon adventure where basically you have a case come up for Sam and Max, who are basically detectives. Mm-hmm. And basically Sam is a dog and Max is a over-hyper-kineticky rabbit thing. This is what they actually describe him as. And it follows the usual cliche of point-and-click, gathering items to use at the same spot. But like I say, the really twisted sense of humour comes in with some of the things you have to do to get hold of items. I could just give you a couple of examples.
Go for it, dude.
One of them is basically you're on a tunnel of love and you have to stop it.
Right.
So you use your usual item, like, it's dark. Oh, let's use a torch to things like this. So you find the junction box. Hey, that's so Sam can't reach it. Okay, so what do you do then? So there's no sort of items which allow you to reach out and things like this. So you opt to basically stick Max's head into the water of the tunnel of love. And
right.
Then when he gets close enough, you then jam his head into the junction box to short it out. and that's not the best one. There's another one where you're in a sort of kids play park sort of thing, and there's a dinosaur.
Yeah.
And you need to get the tooth. So you've got a rope, so you wrap that around the tooth, no problems. Too strong to pull out.
Yeah.
Fair enough. So then you tie the rope around Max's neck. And you're like, well, what do you do now? It's around his neck. And then basically what happens is then you pick Max up and you throw him through the windscreen of your car. I am not kidding.
Wow, that sounds painful.
It sounds very painful, but luckily enough for Max, he kind of doesn't feel pain in any shape, way or form. But the overall of the game is that the cartoon side to it is fantastic as well. For its time, it was very well animated for everything else. If you had the speech edition of it as well, then the speech edition just made that a little bit more special.
What made you get into this game then, Tony? I mean, what made you get this game in the first place? Had you heard of it? Had you seen a review on it?
Well, the other side to it as well is LucasArts had just previously finished their work on Day of the Tentacle.
Mm-hmm.
Which for
another classic.
That was the sequel to Maniac Mansion.
Mm-hmm.
Which was a good one for that. And basically I was looking over in the magazines, as I usually do, and I saw that this game was in the works. And it came to a point where I was a big fan of Day of the Tentacle. I still am now, because it's one of those classics. And let's give this one a go, and things like this. And I wasn't disappointed. LucasArts always had this mass quality of making top-notch point-and-click adventure games. Sam and Max is one of them. And then they also did things like Full Throttle, which was mm-hmm. a fantastic one as well. And they also did one, I believe, one called The Dig as well, which I believe was done in conjunction with Spielberg or someone like that.
But going back to Sam and Max and Tony, mm-hmm. did you actually ever watch the animated series? Because I'm sure there was an animated series.
There was an animated series for it as well. And yeah, the animated series was for kids as well, just as dark as twisted as what the game was. And so, yeah, there was a few things toned down because it was aimed for the smaller market, things like this.
Yeah.
But the game had that little bit more quirky humour, which the adults were the thing. Because back in that sort of time, the PC wasn't exactly seen as a mainstream gaming machine.
So will you definitely recommend that I get this game, Tony? Because recently, well, I said recently, about a year and a bit ago, it came out on the Xbox 360. It came out in episodes. So basically this episodic. So I've always been tempted to get it. I really enjoyed the Monkey Island games. So do you think if I enjoyed those games, I would actually get into the humour and style of gameplay of that?
Well, the humour and style of Sam and Max to Monkey Island is very, very different.
Right, okay.
Like I say, Sam and Max is extremely slapstick alongside that one. And does have that little thing. Now, I know they did have the episodic ones going there. Now, I've not had the fortune of actually playing them. I know they're available somewhere, so I will get hold of them at some point. But if you want to have a start, you've got to start with the original alongside
that. You know
that
what?
One.
I think exactly what I might do. Next payday, when I get paid, I think I'll definitely get that game. All right, dude, I'll tell you what. Let's move on to your next game. What is your next game that you want to talk to us about?
Okay, and the next game on the PC hit list for me is Dungeon Keeper.
Chosen another game I've never heard of. Enlighten me, please, mates.
Enlighten me. Dungeon Keeper. Well, Dungeon Keeper was basically produced by Bullfrog, which was a division that worked for Electronic Arts when they actually made some decent games. but Bullfrog also specialised in the theme park games and also Syndicate and things like this. But Dungeon Keeper was one of their top rate ones to me. Because in a time when it was released, it really did stand out amongst other games.
What sort of game was it then, Tony, for those of us that don't know, like myself?
It was basically a cross between a sort of strategy and a simulation game. The simulation side to it wasn't heavy at all. It was very, very light and things like this, simple things to keep the game going. And basically you play the role of the bad dungeon keeper sort of thing. And basically, you're out tormenting the people of the lands.
Right.
Now, basically, what you do, you'll be given nice open areas and things like this where you can build your dungeons. And your dungeons will consist of basically, you start off like hatcheries so people can eat, your monsters can eat, lairs for them to live in. Mm-hmm. And then later on, you'll get training rooms, workshops so you can build traps for your dungeons. And then you've also got things like libraries, so you can research magic spells. And these all go into a nice group bundle for when the forces are good, show their face, and you give them a great big ass-kicking and send them back where they came from. Because that's the majority of the time that would happen. Because at some point during the adventure, the lord of the land would come over with his jolly bunch of folks and things like this. And then basically you just have to seize your monsters and go out and give him an almighty kicking and send him packing.
That's fine, yeah. Now, that was interesting, mate.
There are some other very, very good little features as well. It's like the monsters themselves, of course, they need to be fed, they need to be paid. Certain monsters won't live with each other. It's like you have things called bile demons, and they were big, fat, ugly red things, and like they won't live with skeletons. And there are various other monsters. So when you get to the point where you have both of those inhabiting your dungeon, you have to have two lairs. So one have to live in one, and one have to live in the other. Because if they live, they'll fight amongst themselves.
How easy is this game to get into? Because, I mean, from what you're describing, it does sound a little bit complicated. Could someone like me that's never played that sort of game actually get drawn into it at all?
Well, the good thing is there's around 20 levels to the whole entire game. And the learning curve is quite nice to it as well. Each and every mission you do, it will give you one extra thing to play with. And
right, so it's one of those things that slowly eases you in. By the time it does ease you in, then you can put it down because you're completely sort of hooked on it.
Yeah, that is true. I got very hooked upon the game as of when it came out. It was also just a little fact of watching your monsters sitting there. They're bouncing around, they're training, and they're happy. You could drop them extra little bits of money, and their happiness will go up. and things like this. So you had to keep your little minions happy as well. You've got little imps who are basically your sort of workers and things like that, or if you do get to a point where monsters are fighting amongst themselves, you could click on the right mouse button and give them a backhand, and basically give them a good slap to basically sit there and say, oi, behave yourself. and everyone will respond differently. If you slap the imps, you see them like sit there, tuck their hands behind their heads.
Yeah.
But if you slap the bile demons, you look very careful. They sit there and they stick their fingers up at you for doing it.
So is this a game you actually finish in, Tony?
I've finished it numerous times over on that one. Because I always used to just sit there and love... The best monster in the game was this big, ugly thing called the Horn Reaper.
And what was he exactly then?
What was she, actually?
Oh, it's a she, wow.
It was a she. It's basically this big, red, ugly monster that you just could not keep happy. The only time this thing was happy was when it was out killing things.
Right.
If the Horn Reaper was asleep, it was getting annoyed. If it was eating, it was getting annoyed. If it was training, it was getting annoyed. And it's one of those monsters you had to give it its own little space,
yeah,
and lock them behind a door. And so it's like, but you always put it near a passage where you know the good guy's going to try and walk down. Because she was the most powerful monster in the game. When you see him come walking down there, you just unlock the door and she'll just fly up the corridor and just massacre anybody that gets in the way.
I think what I might have to do is actually to get more of an idea of it, I might actually have to go into YouTube and just to see it actually in action, to sort of see whether it is my sort of game. I like playing games that I haven't played before because for me it's just a self of discovery game, finding out these things. So I'm definitely going to play this Emma Metz. I'm definitely going to play this Dungeon Keeper just to sort of give it a go, basically.
Yeah, I do believe the old Windows 95 version of Dungeon Keeper, if you can find it laying around, is still compatible with today's machines.
But all in all then, you definitely recommend this to all our retro gaming fans out there who haven't played it?
Yes, I do recommend it. Even if it's just for the fact of when you get the torture chamber as an option, you get one's monster coming known as the Dark Mistress. And basically, mm-hmm. if she isn't training or sleeping or eating, she's in the torture chamber torturing herself. And you can hear it. Sounds bizarre, mate.
Sounds very bizarre.
It's very bizarre because you can hear her screaming and all that lot, and she's practically enjoying it.
Oh, wow.
and again, you get a prison. Once you get the prison option up, you then have the option to either kill the intruders or you can knock them unconscious.
Yeah.
And then if you knock them unconscious, they'll then get chucked in the prison. And then you could torture them, and then they'll either die miserably, they'll reveal part of the enemy territory to you, or they'll give up and they'll join your side.
This game sounds like a lot of torturing and a lot of pain giving, and
this is the whole premise, because you are the dungeon keeper.
Mm. Yeah?
You are the bad guy,
right?
In this one, and that's another thing which drew me to the whole sort of thing, because you was the bad guy,
right? And so, in theory, then you want to be the bad guy, then, Tony.
Oh, yeah, I'm always the bad guy.
Well, you're the traffic warden.
Yeah, that is true.
All right, mate, I tell you what, we're going to round that bit up. We're going to move on to my games. Now, the first game I'm going to talk about was an arcade game, and that arcade game was Aliens. Now, Aliens came out in 1990. It was a two-player shoot-'em-up game based on the film, and it was made by Konami. And I remember first playing this game and the swimming pool that I used to go to up in Elephant Castle, and I was completely blown away by this game. At the time, I had never seen the movies because I was probably about 11 years old, and basically you played the part of Ripley and Hicks, and it was a scrolling shoot 'em up. And basically, you had your joystick, you had two shoot buttons. One was to shoot high, one was to shoot low. And what I liked about it, the graphics were good. There was loads of enemies attacking you. And when I finally did watch the movie, I realized that this game basically did make use of the license. And, I don't know, played around with it a little bit. Because a lot of the things that happened in this game did not happen in the movie. But it's such a good game that you can actually forgive it, basically. So what's your memory of this game then, Tony?
Yeah, I actually do remember playing that on the arcade as well. I do full-heartedly agree with you. It was a good use of the license. And anything which they did create to put as additional to basically pad the game out that little bit more didn't feel out of place.
I think it's not overly a huge game, actually, but it's interesting. I think it's got six levels. And I recently played it on Main Hub with Malk. And we got about, maybe you talk about the third level. There's a bit where basically all the aliens are attacking this lift, and they're trying to get the lift wires, and you literally got to try and shoot them. And it's just so hectic. And I think it really captured the atmosphere of the film so well. And looking back at it, I think the graphics have aged beautifully. Okay, Ripley doesn't quite look like Ripley. She's got blonde hair in this. Hicks, I suppose, does look like Hicks. But because it was made by Konami, it sort of feels sort of like Contra in a way. Like the baddies, basically, the main bosses. Like I think the first main boss, the creature appears from the top of the screen, and it turns out to be like a little sort of Space Invader type game. And this, you know, his neck keeps on extending, and what you've got to try and do is shoot him. Once you've shot his neck off, he starts shooting these bigger bullets at you, and you've got to try and avoid him. So I think it's just really hectic and really enjoyable from the get-go, and it's probably one of my favourite arcade games ever.
Yeah, but I personally do agree on this one. It does come down as one of the good ones for mine. And they even went to the pack, even with the final encounter with the Alien Queen and things like that, they give you the power loader as well.
Oh, yes, that's right. One of the classic scenes from the film actually made it into the game.
Yes, yeah, so you can actually get a hold of that power loader and give her a good beating. But the good thing I actually did like is that even though if you are in the power loader, she is still incredibly hard to bring down.
Yeah.
So it doesn't quite give you that much of a home field advantage, but it's still nice to see the nod to the film amongst that.
Yeah, I think it was a great use of a license, definitely. I mean, there are other Aliens games, but for me, this is the one that I'll always remember the most. I mean, there was one on the ZX Spectrum, which was sort of like you had to scroll left, right. It was like a 3D type affair. I quite enjoyed it, but this was really action-packed. Definitely one to give it a go. And it's one of the games that I really hope that Konami basically will release on the Xbox 360, because I like these sort of like scrolling shoot-em-up, stroke beat-em-up type games. And I think this one would actually work in the Xbox Arcade, and I'd be more than happy to spend, 1,000-something Xbox points in this game.
I think a lot of people don't realise that these old games were great in their time and things like this. And if they sat down and done that, they re-released the Turtles in Time, and they basically did a 3D job on this sort of thing. They don't even really need to do a 3D job on these ones. If they just redid the graphics, have some nice high-res sprites, which they've got nowadays, and things like this,
and
just kept the gameplay as it was, they'll be perfectly viable.
Well, I mean, that's what they've done with Double Dragon. That's what they've done with Final Fight. They had the same gameplay elements. Didn't really change the graphics. They just high-res them up. And you can change the graphics to the normal resolution, or you can just have it, you know, like the more modern sort of version. But Turtles in Time, they shouldn't have tinkered around with it, basically. So, Konami, if you are listening to this, and I really hope you're listening to this podcast, please, please, please release this game on the Xbox 360, because I'll buy it, definitely.
It's always good. And how one man can sit there and change the gaming world. At least we can hope so. So, mate, what's your second game of choice, then? What's your poison?
All right, the next game is Wave Race on the N64. This game came out in 1996, and to be honest with you, I don't think there were many good, decent racing games on the N64. At the time, I didn't have a PlayStation, because I got my PlayStation a few years after I got myself the N64. And on the PlayStation, you had games like Ridge Racer and all these other classic racing games. And I was always disappointed with stuff like Cruising USA. And then when I finally did manage to get my hands on Wave Race, I was blown away by it. Basically, you're on these little jet skis. You're racing along the lakes. But what made this game work so well was the waves. It actually moved like a real sort of like an ocean or like a real lake or something. And no matter how many times you practice going around in laps, the waves would always change, and that would actually affect your gameplay. Sometimes it would hinder you. Sometimes it would help you. Sometimes you'd get big waves and you'd have to sort of like jump up and you could go underneath the water. It just had so much variety, and it wasn't just like a normal racing game where you just go around in circles. You had these buoys, those little floating things in the water with an L and an R on them. So obviously if the buoy said like an L, you'd have to go around the left of it. If it had an R, obviously you'd have to go around the right of it. And there were all these little things that made this game special. You could do tricks, you had these ramps, you could build up like speed. What was your experience on this game then?
Unfortunately, that was one of the 64 library I actually never played, surprisingly enough. And
wow.
Yes, well, I didn't try. And I would actually agree with you, yeah, there wasn't all that many good racing games on the 64, as far as it was. The only real sort of jet skiing game and things like that I can remember is probably I think it's Aquajet, the Namco one. But going back to the 64 version, I didn't have any experience with that one, unfortunately.
I'll tell you what, mate, you know, you absolutely missed out on it. And the reason why I'm saying that was because I got this game maybe a few years after it came out, because I think it came out in 96, and I got this game around 98, 99. And I regret not getting this game when it first came out, because graphically, it still looked beautiful, but it worked so well, Tony. Honestly, there were shortcuts certain times. I mean, the waves would go really, really high, and there was times, Tony, where you could actually go up the wave and use that to jump over, like, and use that as shortcuts. Sometimes you'd try and do it, you know, try and jump over a wall, but the waves would be small, so you'd end up messing and crashing up against the wall. It was just, it had so much variety, and I don't think there's been a game since then that's used, like, waves to this effect. I know it did get a sequel on the GameCube. I can't remember what it was called, the sequel, but basically it didn't feel the same. It felt, like, cheaper. It just, the waves didn't feel good. The whole mechanics of the game wasn't quite as good either.
Yeah, it goes to say that one. Unfortunately, Nintendo are very, very guilty a lot of times of basically cashing in on a lot of their own franchises. We know that far too much for a fact. But judging by what you said on this one, yeah, it is good. And with the wave differentiation and things like this, it does make for a different race each time. You could do one thing one time, you could have a nice easy way around, you could go around there another time, and it'll be an absolute nightmare for you.
That's exactly what it was like. And there was one level, Tony, that I used to love. It was this beautiful, peaceful lake. And what I liked about it, it's just the reflection of all these sort of objects on the side, like trees, and like the sun in the sky would be reflecting on the water. And the moment you'd go through that water, the water would ripple, and it looked so beautiful. And I'll tell you what, I need to get myself an N64 again. I need to get this game. And I think next time, if I meet up with you, we'll go to a car boot sale, and if I can find an N64 and I can find this game, I'll definitely buy it, because I really want that game that badly again.
Yeah, you want the real feel, which somehow the emulation is good, but you just can't get the same sort of buzz because you haven't got the right controller.
But what I do want to say, though, is basically, guys, if you have enjoyed or played any of these games that we've talked about, please feel free to give us your opinion and let us know what your experience was, because I haven't played Dungeon Keeper, I haven't played Seven Max. What do you guys think of those games? Do you like it? Do you not like it? Do you think I would like it? And what do you guys think of Wave Race? Do you think it's overrated? Do you think the graphics have aged really badly now? Would I get the same experience? Yeah, feel free to comment when we post this on the site.
And also, not just comment, if, like I say, we do have our user blog section, and if you do want to review the game yourself, then go right ahead. Like I say, it's what we have our user blogs there for. It's for even for the guys like you as well. Review the game, so we can actually talk to you about it as well. So feel free.
Totally, mate. Now, normally in this next section coming up, we have got the topic of the month, but what we have got here now is one of our community members that we pre-recorded a podcast with, and it's like a little interview. And that interview, go on, who's that with then, Tony? I'll let you do the honours.
Let me do the honours of Mr. Asperger's Gamer 64, our little guinea pig for this one, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. And I tell you what, I'm sure you'll enjoy this section of the podcast, as he was an amazing guest. And yeah, hopefully we can get more of your community like on the podcast. So yeah, enjoy this section of the podcast. So much for being a guest on this podcast.
My pleasure. Am I getting paid for this?
You don't get paid, unfortunately. Well, actually, if you do come down to one of our meetups, We'll get Tony to buy you a few beers. Yeah, so the beers are on Tony.
Yeah.
So the name Asperger's Gamers, where does that come from?
Well, as you know, I suffer from Asperger's Syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
And also I like gaming.
Yeah.
But, well, I might as well put them two together. Now, the 64, that comes from my favourite console, the Nintendo 64.
Ah, okay. So it's a nice little triple combination of you got the names going there. That's fantastic, yeah. Mate. Right, so I'll tell you what, you mentioned Asperger's there. We'll go on to the Asperger's syndrome, if you don't mind.
Yes.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about what Asperger's is?
It is a disorder that I can't really socialise very well with people. I get a bit hectic and all like that. It takes me a while to understand stuff. I have to do things in bits, not in a whole way, just like in bits.
Yeah.
It takes me a while to understand stuff. I do get a bit, like, depressed and, you know, things go through my mind quite a lot.
Yeah. But, you know, one of the things I've actually noticed that you've got here on the Skype thing, it says, I have Asperger's syndrome, I'm proud of it, and I'm not ashamed of it. And, you know, that's really good, mate.
I'm proud of it, but I'm not ashamed of it. I'm happy.
Okay. The other name you're known as, you've got a YouTube channel. What's your YouTube channel called?
Mr. Gamer One.
Right, so where does that name, Mr. Gamer One, come from?
I have no idea. I just randomly just typed it in. Okay, Mr. Gamer One.
So obviously, you've got your YouTube channel, you're a gamer, you're also a member of our site.
Yes.
So tell us, how did you first get into gaming?
It was quite slowly, really. It wasn't just like that. It was just nice and slowly building my way up towards it.
How many years ago would you say that was?
Somewhere in the early 90s.
Right, so how old roughly were you then?
About 5, 6, something like that, when the Super Nintendo was in its prime.
All right, so I take it then that the Super Nintendo was the first console that you owned?
Yep.
Right, so when did you get your Super Nintendo, for birthday or Christmas?
Actually, my dad bought it, actually.
Oh, you bought it for you? Fantastic. It's a great little gift there.
He went to the store, and he went in, what was the best game console of all time, and then there was a Sega, Mass Mega Drive, and a Super Nintendo, and they suggested Super Nintendo to him, and so then he bought that.
So what were your first impressions then, when your dad gave you your Super Nintendo then? You must have been ecstatic.
Not really. Well, I didn't know what video games were when I was young. I didn't even know what it was.
Didn't you, really?
I just saw my dad playing on it, and I thought, oh, I'll do it, and I got really interested in it.
So what was the first game that you actually played on the Super Nintendo then?
Oh, Super Mario World.
Right, so mate, tell us your overall impression of why you like this game in particular then.
It was just a fun platformer. The music was great. It was the unique stuff you can do. You can like jump, spin jump, you can also fly, and you get these power-ups, which is awesome.
Yeah.
It was just brilliant. You can also ride Yoshi. The one thing unique I like about it, when you ride Yoshi, the music changes. That's pretty awesome. Funny thing I like about Yoshi, you can get rid of him, you can do an extra jump with him.
It's lots of little gameplay, things like that, that got added by having Yoshi in it. Did you finish this game at all?
Yes, before I went to school.
Did you, really?
Yeah, I got up to the end. I was up to the end, and I was fighting Bowser, and I kicked his ass.
I'll tell you what, I personally think that's one of the greatest Super Mario games ever. How do you think it compares to all the other games?
Mario 64 was a good one. I think was the best. It's just the way when I first played that Super Mario 64 game, I heard voices and just seeing him go around this 3D environment was awesome.
On to the N64 in a little bit. We'll talk more a little bit about the Super Mario World.
Yeah.
So, what are the other particular levels that you liked in this game? Did you like Star Road? Did you like the underwater sections?
Star Road was brilliant. You had to like, as soon as you finish the Star Road, you go into this special world with the Super Nintendo symbol in it. Well, that was awesome. When you complete your Star World, you go in the middle and you go in that star and into this special world.
And did you ever find that little cheat? It's in one of the levels near one of the castles in the top part of the world, where basically you get like over 99 lives. You're meant to hit this P switch, you run, and all the baddies turn into coins, and you collect all those coins to turn into lives.
No, I've never done that.
Really? That's how I got through the game.
One thing I knew about. Do you remember Games World?
Yeah.
Right. There's one cheat I learned from that program. You know, in the first Ghost House, get the F7, we're all the way, fly up, and there's a path, platform all the way up. You go in there, and there's a secret behind the Ghost House, the level.
I think there was like about 100 and something levels in that particular game. Some of them were hidden, some of them were really hard to find.
Yeah.
Did you actually manage to find them all?
Yeah, I can actually find them all, yeah.
All right then, so let's move on to another game then. What was another classic game that you used to have on the Super Nintendo?
Super Castlevania 4.
Wow, great choice for a game, mate, because this is one of my favourite games ever. Tell me exactly why you like this game.
The music, the sound, the way that you control Simon's whip, mm-hmm. and the way you can actually make him moonwalk up the stairs. That's just brilliant.
So, I mean, like, you know, like, when the game first loads up, you get that amazing sort of, like, animated screen where you see Simon atmosphere. Going into the castle, and then you see the first level where basically you're in a courtyard and you've got lions. What was your first overall impression of that first level?
Just wow. Just amazing. Just all carries on in the background while you're walking in.
Had you actually ever seen any of the previous Castlevania games before this Castlevania or not?
Yes. The only previous one before I played 2 and 3 was Castlevania 1 for the NES.
And you've got to admit, though, the graphics are a huge improvement, and its overall gameplay feels a lot better.
Yeah, but what I can't understand is, in later games, why did they remove Simon the whip ability and move in different directions? Why did they remove that?
I have no idea, because I love the way that you can swing your whip round in circles. Sometimes you can move it diagonally, and
you can just hold it still. You can just hold it still as well and just twiggle it.
All right, then. So, like, what were some of your favourite boss battles on this particular game?
The boss comes in when you first start. Guy on the skeleton horse.
Yeah, I think that was the first proper end of level guardian, wasn't it?
Yeah, the reason why I liked him when his horse died, just when he killed him, he went and just fell to the ground. And when you hit the boss for the last time, he splitted, didn't he? Like a massive thing, like blew up and it came back together. And then when you hit him, it just crumbles to pieces. I quite like that animation when you hit him, it crumbles all to pieces.
It's absolutely superb. I mean, some of the other bosses as well. What were the other bosses like as well? Because I can't quite remember them. Isn't there like a big giant rock creature as well?
Yeah, there was. That was quite unique, that one. It kept changing size. Every time you hit it, it kept changing size. And the screen kept flashing as well.
Yeah, it had some amazing, epic boss battles. Yeah. But, I mean, I think overall the whole game was just, like, epic. And what I liked about it, Will, was that it keeps on getting better and improving. The more you progress through each level, the graphics get better, the sound keeps on getting better, the game gets darker.
Yeah.
And it's one hell of a tough game to complete. Have you finished it?
Yep, I finished it.
Did you? Wow, I managed to get to the
All the way through.
Oh, man, so... Did you get, like, a good self-sense of achievement when you beat the final boss?
Oh, God, it was so sensational. I finally beat the game.
All right, so let's talk about some of the graphical tricks of this game. This game used some Mode 7 trickery, didn't it?
Oh, yeah, it did, with the one part of level 4 when you go around this tower. It was really unique. I really enjoyed that. It felt like we're going round and round and round, didn't it?
That's right. Do you remember the first time, I think it's probably about the third level, you get like a little thing where you have to use your whip and then you swing across.
Yeah.
And that was an amazing touch of the game. Yeah. And then later on, Will, did you see that bit where you hook onto this ledge?
Yeah, you have to hold on and it goes, spins around.
Do you see anything like that before in a game? Because I sure hadn't.
I've never actually seen anything like that in a game before until Castlevania 4. That was... pretty unique.
So overall then, are you a big fan of the Castlevania games then?
Yes, huge fan.
Alright, we're not going to go into great detail, but I mean, if you could give me like, which are your favourite Castlevania games?
Castlevania 64, Castlevania Legacy of Darkness, Super Castlevania 4, Castlevania 1 on the PlayStation 2, Symphony of the Night, Circles of the one on the GBA, Arrows of Sorrow, the third one on the GBA.
Yeah. Did you ever play Rondo of Blood?
Yes, I actually have played Rondo of Blood. Yes, I have. I got that on the PSP with the remake for it.
You know what? I need to get myself that game because that game does look absolutely epic. I played the scaled-down version on the Super Nintendo, which was called Vampire's Kiss.
Yeah, I quite like that one, actually. I don't care what people think. That's quite a good game. I kind of enjoy that one.
But again, it's like you said, Will, though. They take away some of the things. It doesn't control us free. With Super Castlevania, you felt in complete control of the Vampire Hunter, but in... Vampire's Kiss, it feels somewhat limited for the fact that you can't move your whip around as much.
Oh, I never got that for the Super Nintendo. I never got it.
Have you played more recently, like the latest Castlevania game, Castlevania Lord of Shadows?
Yes, I did.
And what's your overall impression of that game then?
Well, it was an okay game. It was all right. I'm not saying it's a crap game, but it kind of felt like you didn't fight Dracula at the end. It just felt like that was missing.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. I enjoyed that game, Will. I really enjoyed it as well. I found it very slow-moving.
Yeah.
It's not until, like, about the 7th or 8th level that it starts to feel like Castlevania, because before that, it feels like Lord of the Rings, doesn't it?
Kind of feels like God of War most of the times.
It does, actually, because of the whole whip thing.
Yeah, and the idea to climb on the monsters and all that.
So let's move away from the whole Super Nintendo. What other sort of consoles did you actually own?
Pretty much I was a Nintendo fanboy in my early years. I had a, I got a Nintendo 64, and I did get an NES. And
so you had your NES after you had the Super Nintendo then?
Yes, yes. Got that for Christmas.
So how did you find sort of like playing that then compared, because you had the ultra amazing graphics of the Super Nintendo, then you had the scaled down graphics of the 8-bit NES. So what was that like going backwards?
Pretty cool actually, seeing some of the early games released before the games on the Super Nintendo.
Well, what were some of your earlier favourite games then you had on Nintendo?
Super Mario Brothers, Mario Brothers 3, Castlevania, Zelda, Adventures of Link, Turtles 2.
Right, yeah. Now, you mentioned a game that I'm a huge fan of, the Zelda.
Yes,
Zelda. Are you a big fan of the Zelda series as well?
Yes, and I can't wait for Skyward Sword.
Well, what is your favourite Zelda game then? Just, it can be in any console. What is it then?
Well, probably it might be a bit of a shock. It's actually Ocarina of Time.
Right, so why do you prefer this Zelda game more than any of the other Zelda games?
When I first saw it, it was like, you know, now he's in 3D and he has full roaming, everything. But the unique things in it, half of the game scared the shit out of me. The Shadow Temple, gave me the bloody willies. The Bomb of the World gave me willies as well. Bloody Redead's a bloody commit you make you paralyzed.
Yeah.
Got the redation to scare the crap out of me.
But I tell you what, I mean, overall, it felt like Zelda. It was easy to control.
Yeah.
You still had to explore everything. Yeah. The boss battles were epic. I mean, how did you feel when you first left the forest?
Very cool. It was like you got this massive land you have to explore.
And it's got so many secrets as well, many hidden things that you have to sort of like look and try and find and everything.
And everybody hates that water temple.
Oh my god, it's a tough water temple.
Well, the funny thing is, you know that Master Quest they released for the GameCube?
Yeah.
That was actually, funny thing is, it was easier on that than it is on that version.
Really?
You know the part when you meet that that Zoro person?
Yeah. Zoro,
when you climb up, you know there's a crap wall with a key behind it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, behind that crap wall was the long shot.
Right.
You find the long shot pretty early if you pull that wall up in the Master Quest version. It's pretty weird.
That is bizarre, because, I mean, I had only started playing Master Quest when I got it on the GameCube as well.
It was no different to the... just dungeons were harder.
I don't know, I think once you got involved in the whole Zelda storyline, you know, you forget how tough it is, and you just start enjoying it, though. All right, so you liked Ocarina of Time, the 3D game. What did you think of Majora's Mask? Because I actually prefer that one.
Yeah, Majora's Mask was quite dark. That was the darkest one they'd ever done. That 3D life cycle, it was confusing for me because I didn't have a walkthrough. You see, this was a blind room for me.
Right.
One thing I hated about it, you have to get that blue expansion pack. That's what annoyed me about it. But it was unique. You have to like find all these masks and try and get them all, and you have to get the ultimate mask at the end. It was quite unique.
So, did you manage to finish this game then?
Oh yes, I did. Yeah, I did. I could complete it with you know that ultimate mask you get at the end.
Yeah,
did it without that.
Oh wow.
It's easy.
So let's move away from the 3D Zelda games then. What was your first experience, you know, overall with Zelda? Well, when was the first time you played a Zelda game?
It was Link to the Past from Super Nintendo. That was one I ever played. I think it was my dad that got me into the Zelda series, because he played the Zelda series quite a lot.
Yeah.
He got me into it.
Okay, so what is it you like about the Super Nintendo version of Zelda then?
The secrets and two worlds in you know, you have to do dungeons in that world and do the dungeons in the dark world, and it's just pretty unique.
That's what I liked about, because I remember you had to get a mirror, didn't you?
Yeah, and you had to like teleport from different places to do certain stuff. It's like there's one point you get this you know that green stone, and you have to go to the dark world and stand on that bit and to get one of those free medallions. You know, one thing I found out about it as well, you know that fairy that gives you the silver arrows?
Yeah.
If you get a level 3 sword in there, you get a golden sword, level 4 one.
You know what? I didn't know. So how exactly do you do this?
Well, you know that fat fairy in Dark World, you know, when you get your silver arrows?
Yeah.
You get your level 3 sword, you know, when you get template for them two dwarfs.
Mm-hmm.
Go to it, throw in the level 3 sword, and it comes out with a gold sword.
I never knew that, mate.
I never knew that until someone told me at school.
I'm going to have to try and play that then. So what did you think of Zelda then on the Game Boy?
Oh, Link Awakens.
Mm-hmm.
Quite surprisingly, you know them that character Richard and those frogs?
Yeah.
They come from a different game, what used the same engine. Apparently, what I heard, that this other game called The Toll That Frogs... Oh, what's it called again? something with frog tall bells. And I can't remember what it's called now.
I think I know the game you're talking about, because you know that game that you're mentioning. I think that's recently been converted properly in English.
Yeah, they did a translation. I played it. It's quite a good game. I heard that is the sequel to that, but I didn't believe it until sometime later.
How does that game actually play then? You've actually played it?
Oh, I played it. Yes, I played it. It kind of feels like Link Awakens. It's just the same engine, just the same platforming, but it's quite unique. Because you have to get transformed into a frog and a snake. It's, it kind of feels like, you know, when you're doing Wonder Boy, you know, when you're similar to that.
But, I mean, what did you think, like, the way the graphics compared on the Game Boy to the Super Nintendo, considering the Game Boy's limitations?
I think it looked all right on the Game Boy. I think it looked fine. I didn't care. I got Zelda on the go. I don't care. I've got Zelda on the portable, on the go, and I don't really care.
All right, then. So, moving away from the whole Zelda series altogether, we're going to give you a little quiz.
Okay.
Right, so just like we do in the regular podcast, I'm going to do this in the style of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire?
Yeah.
I'll give you five answers, and one of them's the correct one. So, are you ready?
Yep, I'll probably get all of them wrong.
I don't think you can do much worse than Glenn.
How much did he get?
Glenn, I think Ollie got one right last time.
I think I have to beat at least one.
Well, I'll tell you what, if you can get at least two, we can laugh at Glenn. Yeah. Right, so question number one.
Okay.
Chucky Egg 2 was also known as A, Chuck Attack, B, Chucky Egg, C, Hen House Harry Strikes Back, or D, Super Chuck.
C, Hen House Harry Strikes Back.
All right, so let me sort of put that down. All right, next up, question number two. Tails the Fox from Sonic is also known as A, Miles, B, Gregory, C, Vixen, D, Chucky.
A, Miles.
Right, okay. Now we'll move on to question number three. What was the name of the main good guy in Monkey Island? Was it A, Jack Sparrow, B, John Silver, C, Guybrush Threepwood, or D, Jerome Salesman?
C, Guybrush Threepwood.
Right. And you're confident that's the correct answer?
Yes, I have played the Monkey Island series.
Right, okay. So, moving on to question number four. Now, what was the name of the main baddie in the classic 8-bit game Barbarian? Was it A, Drut? Was it B, Drax? Was it C, Krull? Or was it D, Ann Robinson?
I'll go for B. This is a wild guess, B.
And B, so you're going to go for Drax?
Yeah.
Right, no problem. Okay, we'll move on to the final question. Right, so who played Super Mario in the movie? Was it A, Danny DeVito? Was it B, Ron Jeremy? Was it C, John Leguizamo? Or was it D, Bob Hoskins?
D, Bob Hoskins.
Okay. Right, so that's all the questions. I'm going to basically read them back out again and tell you whether you're correct or not correct. So question number one was, Chucky Egg 2 was also known as, and you basically said, C. Hen House Harry Strikes Back. Now, how confident are you got that one right then, Will?
I knew about it, but I knew he had a different name as well.
Right. So let me tell you, mate, you got that one wrong.
That was a guess.
Not to worry. The actual game was called Chucky Egg because it was set around a chocolate factory.
Oh, yeah, it was. We're like a Kinder Surprise time one.
Yeah, I mean, that game was a bit of a disappointment. It was not a bad game, but it's not as good as the original, basically. Right, so the second question was, Tails the Fox is also known as... And you said A, which was Miles. Now, are you...
Yeah, I know it's Miles. I know it is.
You're right.
Yeah, Miles Tells Power.
That's it. Fantastic, mate. So well done. You've got one right. So even if you get all the others wrong, you still basically... Well, you match Glenn. So let's see if you can beat Glenn then. Question number three was, what was the name of the main good guy in the Monkey Island series. You said?
Guybrush Threepwood.
You know what? You know your Monkey Island games.
Yeah,
well,
I know
done.
My Monkey Island games. I know them.
Well, I'll tell you what. You're doing so much better than Glenn. You've got two right so far. Right, so moving on to the fourth question, which
I'm going to get this wrong.
What was the name of the baddie in the Barbarian games? You said B, Drax.
I was going to say Drut.
Now,
I'm
you
get
could
this
have
wrong.
Said Drut. You could have said Kroll. You could have said Anne Robinson. Now, how certain are you got this one right then?
I don't know. I just guessed because I've never played the 8-bit version of Barbarian.
Right. So let me tell you.
This is the guess.
You guessed right, mate. Well done.
Hey.
Well done. Hey.
That was a shot in the dark.
Yeah. Right. Question number 5. So far, you've got 3 rights. Now let's see if you can get 4 rights. Question 5 was: who played Super Mario in the movie? You said D. Bob Hoskins, mate. You're completely correct. It was Bob Hoskins, mate. It was. Well done, mate. So, yeah, you got 4 out of 5. Fantastic, mate. Well done. You certainly know your games.
Well, slowly.
No, definitely. You've done a lot better than Glenn.
Oh, yeah.
Right, so that's rounded up our little Quizmaster section. I just thought it would be a bit fun for all of us if we sort of like did that.
Yeah.
Right, so I'll tell you what, we're going to start rounding this up. And I also want to thank you, basically, for uploading some great videos, actually, on the 1HMPS Retro site. You're absolutely doing loads of them, and it really helps the site grow and get bigger and better, basically. All right, mate. Well, thank you so much for taking the time and doing this, buddy.
My pleasure.
All right, you take care then, Will.
You too.
Right, we just want to say a big thank you to Spurgeons again for... give this time so we can have a little chat to him and let us hear what his experiences of gaming are and everything. Right, moving on. Now we're going to that dreaded little area. Yes, we're off to the Q&A section.
Woohoo, I love this part, mate.
I know you do. And you was waiting to hit me with a very nasty question, weren't you?
All right, so I'll tell you what. Let me read the first question. We've got a question from one of our community members, which is Daydream. And he says, just a quick question. What is your favourite bonus stage? 3 that he remembers are Street Fighter 2, the Smash 'Em Up, the car before the time limit. The second one he remembers, Sonic the Hedgehog, the very coin collecting, the trippy one. And 3, Mortal Kombat, Test Your Might.
Ah,
so what's your thing for that then? Bonus stage that you like.
Yeah, 3 definitive good choices on that one.
Definitely. I think he's read out my 3, the ones I wanted to pick. But.
Now, bonus games. I did like the 1 out of 8 fighting, where you had
what
to
was
sit
the
there
one
and chop the tops off the bottles.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
That was a really good one, that was. And again, the Mortal Kombat test, I'm like, yeah, let's just power up and just chop some ridiculous shit up. Things like this. Just because you're that hard, you tear people's heads off and things like this, and you can't even chop up a piece of wood. That's just embarrassing.
I thought of one now, Tony.
Go on, then.
The one that sticks to mind for me is International Karate Plus on the 8-bit computers, and even on the 16-bit computers, where basically you had the bonus round, where basically you had to sort of like deflect these what looked like cannonballs or bouncing balls that were attacking you, and you'd have to use these pads to deflect them. That was good. I used to love that when I used to play International Karate Plus, and it used to add like an extra element to the actual main game.
Unfortunately, you're going to hate me for this. I haven't actually sat down and played International Karate Plus. Oh dear,
you've never played that.
I'm going to get gagged.
shame on you. I think as soon as we finish this podcast, you should sort of like go out and play it.
Well,
definitely.
I'll have to have a dig because I'll play the Spectrum version because you know me. But trying to think of any other bonus games that were just absolutely awesome.
I can't think of any because all the ones that he's mentioned, or Daydream's mentioned, are the ones that I would have actually suggested. I'm trying to think of some as well.
It would have been the same sort of thing for me as well. Oh, well. But we'll
move on to the next question.
Yeah,
then.
We've gone completely brain dead. Me through just trying to think and you through beer.
Yeah, I'm actually drunk through this podcast. I'm trying to be rock and roll, but if anything, I'm starting to sound like Rebsy Nesbitt. Go on then, mate. So you read the next question out then.
Okay, so we'll be going down. We'll have a look at old T. I'll see what he's got for us. Oh, gee. I think we're going to shorthand these down a little bit.
Come on then, mate. What is it?
Oh, we'll go for the first one. We'll shorthand this down. What was your favourite wrestling game of all time?
Which is not SmackDown, No Mercy, or WrestleMania 2000. What is it? Go on, mate.
Mercy, did you have a look? Well, like I say, my personal favourite, going backwards, like I say, I did like the WWE ones before Acclaim went bankrupt and things like that. But it wasn't because of its single player side of it. It's because when I was with me mates, and if C64 boys listening in, you'll know exactly what I mean, because of the fact we made a great tag team as far as it went. But the original WWE games, the move sets were that little bit more complex. But when you've got three mates over and you're just slaughtering each other out in a hardcore match, it's just fantastic.
I've got two games, mate, that I've got in mind. I love my wrestling games because I love my wrestling. The first one is traveling a little bit back further in time to the 8-bit computers again, and that game was Rock and Wrestle. I loved that game. Absolutely amazing.
That's possibly one of the only decent wrestling games that was on the 8-bit system.
I think it is the only one that actually works, because it still amazes me. Like one of the videos you talked about, where Yeah Kung Fu, you had one joystick and you could sort of do so many moves. It's the same thing for Rock and Wrestle. You had one joystick, one button, and you could pull off so many moves. You could do suplexes, you could do drop kicks, clothesline, flying body presses. Aeroplane spin. So many moves that you could do, and it plays so well.
It was Melbourne House who did that, wasn't it, if I remember
right? Yeah, definitely. I think you're right. Right, the other wrestling game that I actually really enjoyed was, I think it was called Super Fire Pro Wrestling.
That's the Japanese one, isn't it?
Yeah, I used to go to this little video shop where I used to rent out all these import games, because I had like a little converter thing, so I could play all these games. And it was one of the games that I had no idea how to do the moves. They had familiar characters. Typical, you had your Hulk Hogan, you had all these other characters that looked like the Road Warriors and so on. But I didn't know how to do the moves. And eventually, I figured them out. And it was an enjoyable little game. And it's a great little series that progressed. And I think the ultimate version of that is probably on the Dreamcast, actually. All right, mate. So let's go back to the questions. What was your favorite beat-em-up of all time? And he goes... And to be fair, it can't be any of the popular series like Double Dragon, Final Fight, Streets of Rage, Golden Axe. He's making this tough on us.
He is making it tough on us.
I can think of one straight away. I'll tell you if you want.
Go on then.
I would go for the Simpsons arcade game. I used to love that. Again, that was done by Konami, and that was beautiful. You could play Homer, Marge, Bart, and Lisa.
That was a really game. Good. And especially if that one included the little team-up attacks and things like that.
Yeah, that was amazing, that. Yeah.
That was the one thing which the Turtles game lacked, but that didn't. So basically the Simpsons one was basically the kind of next evolution on from that one.
Yeah, it's a shame that never got released on the Xbox 360. What was your beat-em-up choice then? What would you go for?
Well, let's try to think. So he said can't have anything like that. So then I'm going to cheapskate out of he said no final fights, so I'm going to cheapskate out and say Captain Commando.
Another classic Capcom game there, basically.
Especially the four player mode as well, because I actually managed to play that with four people and things like that, and that was just awesome.
Mm-hmm. All right, mate, do you want to read out the next question?
Okay, well let's go to Malk. His one seems a little bit more easier to do.
Sure.
What's the worst game you've ever played?
My worst game I've actually ever played, probably Chase HQ on the Commodore 64. That game is a really bad piece of programming. Basically, they took the graphics of the ZX Spectrum, made the color look worse, made the frames of animation worse. The game was unplayable, unresponsive, and it was a complete total piece of crap. And I think I'll probably do a WTF on that at some point. Worst game ever.
Well, I could give you mine, because I reviewed it about a couple of days ago, and if anyone knows, yes, good old E.T. Yeah, I had the absolute joy of playing that piece of crap.
But saying that though, if you look on the forum, basically you'll find someone that completely disagrees with you.
Yes,
on that.
Yes, indeed it is, and that is leading me to actually go and perhaps do a follow up to that one. Look at some of the other E.T. games that are around about. I was checking out on Wikipedia, and there's been quite a few of them, so. It may be worth looking into it, see if there actually was a decent M.E.T. game that ever got released.
I had no idea about that. But yeah, you know, why not do a video on that at some point?
Yeah.
Right, so he puts, what do you prefer, tea or coffee?
Me, coffee. But none of the cheap bog standard sort of stuff, things like this. Mine's got to be a nice Alta Rica or something like that, nice expensive coffee. Ones that doesn't leave that nasty taste in your mouth like Nescafe does when you're drinking it.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'd go for coffee as well. The reason why I'd go for coffee is because I do shift work. I'm so shattered a lot of the time at work that literally I survive on caffeine, and a good cup of coffee will keep me awake. So, yeah, I'd go for coffee. All right, you go for the next question then, Tony.
Go to me. Is there any games you really wanted but you didn't buy? For me, let's have a look. I think it was back when I had my Commodore 64. I wanted the two Turrican games, and I never had them. You never actually got them? I only had demos. I never had the full games. And the Turrican series is a prime example of... I'm going to hate myself for this, of Commodore 64 at the best.
It was awesome, the Commodore 64, wasn't it?
No, you're not going to get me to say it, because I'm going to have to sit there and go scrub.
I have to admit it. When the C64 version was better, I had to admit it. And the reason why I say that, because I actually had a C64 as well, mate. So, yeah.
And like I say, we'll put hands up. The Commodore 64 version, even in my own opinion, was better than the 16-bit versions as well.
They look good.
That's my own honest opinion about that one as well.
I can't think of a game, to be honest with you. At the time, it may sound a bit bizarre, I really wanted to get Ultimate Mortal Kombat, because you had all the characters from all the games. And back in the day, I used to be a huge Mortal Kombat fan. And I just thought, I really need to get this. I really need to get it. And I really regretted not getting it. But since then, I found out the game's not that great. Probably the best Mortal Kombat game at the time was Mortal Kombat 2. All right, I'll tell you what, let me move on to the next question. This question is from Swainy. He didn't put it on the forum. He sent it to me via text. And he put, if you could own any famous TV or movie vehicle, which one would it be? So that can basically be anything from push bikes to spaceships to cars. What would it be then, Tony?
Let's have a look-see. Even though I don't ride it myself. And hey, guess what? Kamen Rider's coming up again on this one. I would want Kamen Rider W's bike.
Right, okay.
Because it's a nice top-of-the-line Honda.
Yeah.
And it's a really, really nice green and purple colour tone to it as well. It just looks the part. It's got a sort of big silver W on the front of it, and it just looks really, really nice.
All right, so I'll tell you what I'd go for. I don't know if you've seen a thing on the forum about what cars you own. Yeah. I decided that I'd put down the DeLorean from Back to the Future, because I went to this comic convention and they had a DeLorean like from Back to the Future, and I stuck a picture of myself in the forum on that, and I'm sitting there in the DeLorean, and all I could think when I was actually sat in a DeLorean was like, I want to travel back to 1955, because it was just awesome. I love that car. Apparently it handles like crap. It's not a great car, but I think visually it just looks beautiful. I love that. I love it.
It is a very beautiful car. It just looks like it's one of those cars which just looks like it eats the road.
It does. I'll tell you what, let's move on to the next question. What else does Mark say? He put, do you think there'll be another video games crash?
That's a very, very difficult question, because there isn't that many original games coming out at the moment alongside it.
I don't think there will be, Tony. You know, reason being now, because video games outsell movies, outsells like CDs and stuff like that. They make a lot more money, you know. Yeah, and it's just companies do go bust and things like that, but I think that paves the way for other companies to like make these games and buy out these other companies. So I don't think there will be, in my personal opinion. Yeah.
Well, you look at the effect with Acclaim Games, like that. They went completely out of it, and think they went bankrupt alongside that one. If anything I say for the games industry and things like this is, I'm waiting for a machine to get over the curse of the third console.
Yeah.
Because as far as I know, Sega got stung by it, Nintendo got stung by it, Sony got stung by it. Unfortunately, it could be Microsoft's turn next.
All right then, dude. Let's move on to the next question. What do you think of 3D games and 3D movies? Just a fad or here to stay?
My own opinion, and sorry about this, just utter bollocks, in my own honest opinion. There isn't that many games that actually support the 3D at the moment, and unfortunately the Xbox can't actually do it properly for the time being. I know.
Saying that though, Tony, I've got to disagree with you there, because I got a Batman Arkham Asylum Special Edition, and it comes with those sort of like classic 3D glasses.
Oh, you got that one?
Yeah, and I tell you what, the game does look pretty impressive. Doesn't really add a lot. It doesn't look proper 3D. It's just basically the same game that's been 3D'd up, basically. But I think if that game had been specifically done for 3D, it would have been amazing, because when it does work and Batman Arkham Asylum, it does work. But it's one of those things that it didn't get made for 3D, so it doesn't work till its full effect. And as for 3D movies, yeah. You know what? I'm a sucker for them, mate. I am. I'm going to go and see Captain America. That's in 3D. I'll see that in 3D. The next Final Destination film, I need to see that in 3D. If there's any 3D porn films, I'll go and see that in 3D.
Oh, they're already out, mate. You just know they are.
Really? You need to let me borrow some then.
No, I don't. Not on my part of our collection now, anyway. But the other long side as well, the PlayStation 3 version of Mortal Kombat, the new one, is actually proper stereoscopic 3D.
Is it? I didn't know that.
Yes, it is. And Sony have also updated a few of their games as well, like Wipeout, to also properly support stereoscopic 3D.
Wow, that would be amazing. You know what? I'd get myself a PS3 just for that, because I'm actually getting myself a 3D TV for Christmas, so I'm looking forward to that. You know what, mate? I think we should round up this Q&A section and move on to our next section, which is Sights on Sights. We're on Sights on Sights, so this is basically where we talk about what's happening on the sites, what we've got planned on the sites, and loads of other things. So what videos have you got coming up then, Tony?
Well, after coming off the rather strange success of my ET, I'm actually planning a different sort of series where, basically on the other day, about a couple of weeks ago now, I put a post on my Facebook page to my friends and asked them to basically... give me a game they remember from the past and things like this, and then basically I'll review it for them.
Sounds good, mate.
Yeah, so my next few reviews I will be doing will be dedicated to my friends and the games that they have chosen. I'm not going to say who has chosen what or anything else like this, as I don't want to spoil what's going to come up. I don't think they're going to be duplicated because everyone's chosen something different or it's not been done yet. So that's basically what I'm going to be up to. I'm also trying to plan another Maimed and Destroyed.
And I'm looking forward to that, because I think your last one got a really good reaction, mate.
It did get a good reaction. It's just finding the right game. And the one I was putting in consideration, which you knew of, was Michael Jackson's Moonwalker.
Okay. But I think that will be split down somewhere down the middle. But again, hey... if we get a good reaction, that's all that really matters. I mean, me personally, I've got loads of 8-bit wars planned. I've got some 16-bit wars. I've got some Sega versus Nintendo 8-bit wars. I've got loads of WTFs. A few other things that I want to quickly mention before we end up rounding up the podcast. The retro meetup, the second retro meetup we've got planned. It's on the 21st of August, so it's in a few weeks' time. It's on a Sunday, and the plan is, if you guys can make it, comment on the site, comment on the forum, let us know that you'll be there. I mean, I'm definitely going to be there. I think Malk said he's going to be there. I think you said you're going to be there. Swainy's definitely going to be there. And the plan is we're going to go to a curry house, have some beers, have some curries, have a vindaloo, drink beers, and talk about retro gaming. So that is the plan for that day.
Oh, indeed. So something I'm looking forward to, because I want to see if anyone else can... go through some of the hot stuff as well. That'll be all good for me.
I can handle it, mate.
And you know, I'm probably going to laden up my phone with all sorts of retro gaming, what I can get on it, and make sure it's fully charged before I leave.
Sounds like a plan, mate.
Yeah, exactly, because like I showed you last time, I've got my fully working Spectrum emulator sitting on there. It wouldn't take me much to get a few more on there and things like that, so we could all be sitting there munching away on a curry and passing my phone around. Maybe rings while I'm there.
Next up, dude, what I want to talk about is please vote for us for the European Podcast Awards.
Yes, indeed. Come on, guys, let's rustle up those votes on there, because, like I say, we want to be on top of the world as far as it goes. We're all almost overtaken on iTunes. We're nearly there, and now we want to take out Europe. So if it comes to any player, we'll be taking over the world sooner or later.
You just want to take over the world, don't you, Tony?
What are you talking about? I do. Well, you just don't know it.
I think basically, speaking about iTunes, we've got 15 iTunes reviews. We haven't had any iTunes review this week, which really upset me. That's the reason why I'm taking to the drink. But now, guys, we're one iTunes review, you know, away from becoming the number one retro gaming podcast on iTunes. There is one other retro gaming podcast, which, to be honest with you, they're crap compared to us, and they've got 16. So we deserve to have at least two more to be above and beyond them. So then that way I can send them a message going, haha, you guys suck, we're better, you know?
Oh, are you really that petty?
Yes, I am.
If you're going to do the proper job, at least send it an email with a bomb attached to it, an email bomber, so you can just spam it from everybody's email address that you suck. You've got to do these things in style.
I'm trying to think. Is there any other things? Oh, yeah. I also want to give a big thanks to Glenn, 83100. I want to give a big thanks to Malk, 1976. Technically, I should have forgotten both your names because you can never remember my name on the podcast. And I'd like to say thank you very much to Swenny101. And I'll tell you what, dude, I'll let you thank the community.
Yep, I'd say big thanks to all you guys out there. Oh, and you've got to mention the competition as well.
Let's tell our listeners what this competition's all about and how they enter it, mate.
Yep, as you all know, we do have that signed photograph of the Oliver twins. Nice, rare item. I can guarantee a few people would be jealous if you've actually been in possession of one of those. And just basically, if you've looked in the forum post so far, basically send us your ideas and a cover design of your own Dizzy game and explain to us exactly what that game is all about and what Dizzy is up to in this one. Now, I did actually try doing my own one, but then again, I'm not allowed to enter.
Well, I'll tell you what, mate, just to encourage people, I think you should do one as well. I mean, I just to give people an idea of what they need to do. Because exactly. We have got a really good one. What was it, Galactic something, Dizzy? That looked awesome. We've got another one by Asperger's Gamers as well, which looks awesome.
And we've got your submission on there with Dizzy and his magic shoes.
that was so crap.
But anyway, guys, like I say, the closing date is coming up soon. So please, like I say, even if you're the worst artist in the world, even if you just draw a circle with a smile on it and things like that and just say, this is Dizzy.
Yeah, like I did.
Exactly. Then that will get you an entry. We're not judging this by your artwork and things. Anybody who puts a picture in and things like this will be put into the draw for this one. And we'll also sit there. We'll also, in one of the podcasts of the draw, we'll go over some of your ideas and just exactly think about how that game would play.
I think we should do that. I think what we'll do, that's how we'll decide the winner. On the 18th podcast, we will go over the winner by talking about how the game would actually pan out and how it will work. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to that, mate. So indeed. I think we said thank you and we said it all. Let's call it a day because I've been awake since 3 o'clock in the morning. Goodbye from me.
And I've been up since 6, so this is goodbye from me.
Right, I'm going to have another beer and I'm getting too fucking drunk. All right, mate. I'll tell you what. Why don't you read out the first question then?
Okie dokies. Let's just have a quick see. Oh, bugger it. I'm on the wrong page.
Do you want me to start first then?
Give us a second. My internet's decided to play dumb.
No, it didn't look good. I prefer the D version. Yeah. Up until, I think, what was it, Deanna Troi crashed it in the movie.
That's true. But mind you, who wouldn't mind crashing into Deanna Troi? Whee!
Gosh, right. how drunk do I sound on this podcast?
Not drunk enough. I said that one. Someone said to me at work, what would your ideal vehicle be? I said, an M1 Abrams. He said, where would you park it? Anywhere I fucking wanted. He's going to argue with me. Oh, I never saw the Dreamcast version. That one. I remember I saw a Game Boy Advance version, but never saw the Greencast.
The Greencast?
The Greencast.
Who's been drinking? Me or you?
damn those Greenpeace. They're ruining Sega.
Oh, man, this is because I've been drinking. Don't let me drink again while I record a podcast ever again. I'll let you lead the way.
What are you talking about? Next time we record a podcast, we're both going to be completely slaughtered. Did you use the Microsoft Paintbrush?
I did, mate, yeah.
I'm going to get you a copy of Photoshop so you can make it look at least halfway decent.
Oh, I have got Photoshop on the Mac, but, you know, I intentionally made it look crap, I think.
Well, look, you could have used the grids. You could have made it look like proper stuff.
Right, fantastic. Let's press stop.